Good evening.
Good evening.
And it's a fine opportunity for me, on my way, as it were, to the airport, to be able to be here and to present some modest aspects of the work of Chacham Matlub Abadi. And this is a book which is a compendium of different things that he wrote, which appeared in the last days of his life, but he himself oversaw the printing and the proofreading and so on. And in this book are various interesting writings of Chacham Matlub, and what I would like to do is to join together and discuss some of the things that he wrote, which reflect how he saw things. Of course, I won't be able to talk about everything, and I don't know everything. I only know certain things that I saw in Chacham Matlub's work. First of all, just as a matter of record, Chacham Matlub was born in Halab in 1889. And his grandfather was a very illustrious rabbi, Rabbi Mordechai Abadi, who was also a Chacham in Halakha and also a what was relatively not usual in Halab at that time, an expert in Kabbalah. And later on, we'll see sections from the introduction that Chacham Shaul Matlub wrote for the book of his grandfather that he published in 1958. Our information about rabbis from Halab stems from several sources. There are archive sources of the history of Halab and of the rabbis. In fact, this weekend, a friend of mine, Dr. Yaron Harel, who is in Deal, and he is a great expert in all of the archive sources about the history and development of the Jews in Syria and in Halab, Aleppo. But also, of course, we have the writings of the rabbis themselves. And we also have a book which first appeared in a very small format with sort of printed on paper that looks like newspaper in 1952 called L'Kedoshim Asher Ba'aretz, which was originally envisioned as a sort of memorial book for the rabbis of Aleppo and then of Sham, of Damascus, and of other places, giving mainly the citations from their gravestones and their day of death so that people could remember them at the appropriate times. And there's also some stories in that book of 1952 about rabbis in Aleppo. Then in 1980, the son of Rabbi Mordechai Atiyah, who used to be in Mexico, his son, who was in Israel in 1980, published an expanded version of the book with pictures and so on, which is also called L'Kedoshim Asher Ba'aretz, for the holy people who are in the earth, but also Aretz is the initials of Aram Tzova, which is the Hebrew name of Halab, according to the Bible. And recently, of course, you know that there appeared in English a book called Aleppo, City of Scholars, which has a lot of interesting information, and it also has a certain angle I'll just mention in it. Okay, so here we see that Rabbi Chacham Matlub grew up in Aleppo, where he studied with the various rabbis, especially Rabbi Ezra Shayo, and he studied together with someone who was several years his elder, Rabbi Yitzhak Dayan. Rabbi Yitzhak Dayan was a scholar who's fought for the Dayan family, whose father, Yeshaya Dayan, was the Avbedin of Halab, and passed away, I believe, in 19, 3, and Yitzhak Dayan, in addition to being a scholar in the usual sense of the term of knowing sources of Torah, was also very much into philosophy and the Kiduk and poetry, and in his works he quotes from the great poets of the medieval time, Yehuda Halevi and Ibn Gevirol, and also in the same way he quotes Bialik and Chernichovsky, who he felt were the great Hebrew poets of his time. And he showed an interesting ability, which is worthy of considering, of being able to integrate aspects of what people such as Bialik and Chernichovsky wrote into his rabbinical writings, although of course there were several things that he didn't agree with Bialik and Chernichovsky. So the fact that you don't entirely agree with somebody doesn't mean, as some people would have it today, that you have to entirely wipe them out. You can choose the positive aspects of many people who you don't agree with fully. Further on, he moved to Jerusalem, and when he moved to Jerusalem, there was a suggestion that he would be appointed the head of Yeshivat Porat Yosef, which shows the league of scholarship that Rabbi Shaul Matlub was considered to be in. And for reasons which are unknown, and he himself glosses over, he refused or did not think that it would be appropriate for him to accept that position. He found himself first he went back to Aleppo for some time in the beginning of the 1920s. And he established a Talmud Torah in Aleppo called Magen David, in which the studies were in Hebrew, rather than, as was customary until then, that you learned that the explanation was in Arabic. Okay? And apparently he had been influenced by his studies of the modern Hebrew writers, and also by his experience in Jerusalem, where already there was a flowering of the new issue. And after spending some time in Aleppo, but apparently he realized that there was no great future there, since everybody was more or less emigrating out to other places, he arrived in Brooklyn. He in Brooklyn, as you know, combined commercial activities with study as a Talmid Chacham, which is the classic Sephardic way. And if we would follow this way, which the Rambam thinks is clearly the correct way, then we would see that people are able to work to a certain extent that's necessary, and after they achieve a certain minimum and necessary background, substantial background in Parnassa, they can then spend other time studying. Today, it's all the more going into, there is either somebody makes money, or they expect to get paid for studying Torah. Now what happened here, there are people here who are more expert than me, and I won't go into a historical description of the experience of Rav Abadi here. Now in the 2005 version in English, which you have in the book of Aleppo City of Scholars, you see that, for instance, the whole issue of Hebrew, modern Hebrew, is played down, as are other things in also places in this volume, because This volume was published in ArtScroll. ArtScroll are not people who are in favor of modern Hebrew, of people who know secular studies, and so on. So in various ways, this is played down. And this is symbolically represented by the fact that in the 1980 volume in Hebrew, the photograph of Rabbi, of Chacham Matlub, is this photograph, in which is clearly a very powerful portrait. I'll later pass on. You can see that he is very determined. He has powerful features. He's a person who is in complete commanding presence. And in the 2005 work, although obviously this same photo was available to them, they chose a photo in which Chacham Matlub appears apparently in his old age, sort of thin, somewhat gaunt, and, you know, sort of, you don't understand, like what they say in Yiddish, never, you don't know why everybody was such a great admirer. So this is a symbolic change also in the perception and the presentation of this unusual personality. In this book is a collection of various things, okay? There's a chidushim, different insights and explanations he had about the Talmud and Tanakh and so on. There are teshuvot in halakha to various issues that came up in the community. There's some poetry that he wrote, which we'll soon see, rhymed prose. There's addresses that he addressed to the different events in the community. And what I would like to do, with your permission, is to look at these texts or sections of them. The Hebrew is not easy because he was a very erudite and learned person who frequently had literary allusions, which probably many of them escape me. But what I would like to do is to read together, and I will translate also into English some of the things as we read them, so that it will be clear. I, on the two sides of this page, cut and pasted from various sources that appear in this book. The first section is, if you look at this side, you see it has numbers, and this is sections from the introduction that he wrote to the book of his grandfather, Mordechai Abadi, called Ma'ayan Ganim, that came out in 1958. And here he writes characteristics of the scholars of Aram Tzoba of Halab as they were in their prime in the 19th century. Okay, and I'll read a line in Hebrew and I'll translate, although I can't translate in rhyme. Amar Nechet HaMechaber Amus Telaot Veloke Be'aityan. Thus says the grandson of the author, because it's the book of his grandfather, who is burdened down with afflictions and is suffering because of them. Reik Mechochmot Ubilti Masig Kemar Midalyan. I am empty of wisdom and I have not attained even a drop out of the bucket of wisdom. Okay, this is the way in which he is presenting himself. Aram Tzova Shelefanim Kibbetza Galuyot Vesipeka Ma'avayan, the city of Aleppo, which in past times gathered together Jews from the various diasporas and provided everything they desired. Nitparsema Dorot Berabbaneha Hamuflagim Bechochema Uveminyan, was famous for many generations by virtue of its rabbis who were very highly attained in learning and in number. בתלמוד מצחצחי חרבות חנית ושריין ושריין. Now here there's a I'll first translate. In the Talmud they would sharpen their swords and their spears and their armor, and they would permit. Now in Hebrew, the two words, vishiryon, visharyan, are written exactly the same, and this is intentional. Shiryon is armor. Visharyan, share, is to permit. Okay? So, they were great, as it were, the field of Talmudic investigation and study and discussion is presented, as it were, as a field of contest in which the knights in gleaming armor go out to prove their mettle. And this metaphor is from Talmudic times, lochamim birachmash al Torah, they're fighting in the battle of Torah. But the great achievement of the rabbis is presented here as, after doing all this great effort, the shariat, they permit. Okay? It's easy to say no. It's easy to say asur. It's easy to be mahmir, to be matir, to say it's permitted. This you really have to be a champion of Torah. And this is how he characterizes the rabbis of Aleppo. Uvanistarot. We're in line five. Uvanistarot bonim olamot ve'omerim den hanyan. And nistarot means, in the esoteric knowledge of Kabbalah and mystical studies, they would build worlds of knowledge. Ve'omerim den hanyan. Hanyan is like lehanot, to bring pleasure. These worlds are created and they bring a pleasure. Sofrim kol otiyot haTorah u'mumchim betiyugan ve'ruyan. They knew to count the words of the Torah and how exactly to write them and delineate them. U'melamedim kahogen nekudotehen u'ta'amehen degushan ve'rifuyan. And they taught correctly how the letters and the ta'amim and the degeshim and the refuyim, which is the opposite of the gesh, should be pronounced. לקיום הדת לא הדים מרעיהם כגחלי אש בליבויה. They were very impassioned and allied with fiery energy in order to preserve the religion, and they looked as if they were men of fire, gahalei esh, coals from the fire. Godrim pirtzoteha usotemim vesotemim mekom hatorpa leaverot ulegeruyan. They used to cordon off and make fences around the paths of sin and build and close off the ways that would lead to sin and to incitement to sin. Hafime mimume hatzviut hanupa gaava vetofian. And they were innocent of the mum is imperfection of hypocrisy, flattery, pride, and the imperfections associated with this. Uborhim miserara kemoshe bireoto tzon kohenia. And they ran away from trying to achieve public status and power, just as Moshe, when he was tending the sheep of Kohen Midian Yitro, and God wanted to appoint him, and he tried to get out of this appointment. And this, once again, was presented as a virtue of the rabbis. Today it's not always easy to believe that people don't want a rabbinic position. They don't want people to honor them. They don't want people to say great things about them. מכשירים נשותיהם להסתפק במועט בקם חרובין ופרפריאן. They would also train the women to be willing to suffice with only a little monetary status and to a little bit of fruit and food to eat. וכמוהם שמחות בחלקן גם כשהלחם אזל מכליין. And just like the men, the women were willing to be satisfied and happy with their portion even when there was no more bread in their vessels of the kitchen. The rabbis were especially careful not to do anything that could monetarily be understood as taking money from someone else, even avak gezel, because this, says Rabbi Shaul Matlub, is the main source of impurity and disgusting behavior. Okay, so it's not that the rabbis were all the time praying so much, which of course they were, or that they were doing other things. One of the main virtues that is being presented as of a Jewish human being, and the rabbis as emblems of that, is that they're very far away from taking any money that has any question that maybe it doesn't belong to them. When they had to give out public money, they always had other people participate in doing this so that nobody would say, well, who knows what he is doing with the public money. Okay, I will read till the end of this paragraph. Middotehem tochan kevaran, mibayit umehutz zahav tzipuyan. Their ethical qualities were that they were the same on the inside as the outside. Okay, usually what may sometimes happen is the person presents themselves as very observant and ethical and so on, but inside they're different. He says, no, they were on both sides covered in gold plate. In other words, no blemish could attach to them. They didn't treat different people differently because they wanted to gain something from them or make believe that they had certain attitudes when they really felt something else. They did not take pride in being able to banish demons or to make women who for many years had no children suddenly become pregnant. And they refused to discuss what will be the future and to give prophecies and value what will be the future of certain people who are lying on their deathbed. Will they live or die? Now, as you know, in several communities in the past and in not a few communities in the present, rabbis present themselves as miracle workers, as people who have power over demons, over angels, and they can tell you the fate of human beings and give blessings to women that they should become pregnant and so on and so forth. And this, according to Rabbi Shaul Matlub, was something which the rabbis of Aleppo were not at all interested in participating in. And this was anathema to their attitude. Okay, so this is one section of which, in the introduction to his grandfather's book, he presents qualities that he feels were characteristic of the rabbis of Aleppo in the times of Aleppo's greatness. And of course, in doing so, he is also presenting what he feels should be the qualities that we should respect and appreciate and look for in rabbis at all times. Except that, in fact, he says, that was epitomized by the rabbis of Aleppo, but it should be the qualities that we look for and inculcate and respect in rabbis, and not, of course, the opposite and the negative qualities which he hints at. Okay, on the same side of this page, we have also written in rhymed prose. Okay, now all of this is prose in rhyme and meter, which is not easy at all to do, and filled with, all the time, literary allusions to different quotations and sources in Tanakh, in Talmud, in Midrash, and all of this under the constraint of meter and rhyme. This, of course, was characteristic of the great Sephardic rabbis in medieval and early modern times, that they were able to do this, and at the same time, this was not merely a formal Baroque presentation, but also the content was preserved as the main function of this effort. Okay, so here we have on the same page the introduction of Chacham HaKuv Avadi to his own book. Yeah, the sources. And he writes, "Se'aram tzuva moladeti ra'iti beracha belimudi." In my hometown of Halab, I saw blessing in my studies. "Betzidkat horai shehikdishuni legavua miyom hivaledi." And this was due to the merit of my parents, who devoted me to the study of Torah and to the service of God from the day I was born. "Alehem hashalom. Imetzuni vezerezuni bedofki uveshokedi al dalte bet hamidrash." And they encouraged me and made me energetic when I would knock on the doors of the Bet HaMidrash and to study Torah there. "Uvameromin sahadi," and my heaven is my witness, "sheharbe lelot ritzfato hayta le'arsi u'marvadi." Many, he says, God is, heaven is my witness, that on many nights I slept on the floor of the Bet HaMidrash. "V'ha'iruni mitenumati," and I was awakened from my slumber, "ha'alfasi v'ha'ashiri," Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, "baritziloni v'gerondi." Baritziloni is Ramban, and Gerondi is Rabbeinu Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim Girona. "Zecher tzadik livracha Rabbi hamuvhak u'nigidi," and now he mentions his primary teacher, "ha'gaon Ezra Shayo." Rabbi Ezra Shayo, "she'avukato hiv'ira lapidina." Avuka is like a torch. And lapid is a different word for a torch. And here there's a very nice metaphor for the continuation of rabbinic learning. It's like a relay race. Okay? And people run with a torch. And that's the rabbis, the elder rabbis of the generation. And the younger people light their torch from those rabbis, and they proceed further, and thus the light of Torah and the torch of Torah is carried forward throughout the generations. So this is a very nice metaphor. "Uve'ayun hitbi'a alai chotamo me'az hivasidi." And he impressed me with the stamp of iyun. Iyun means a deep learning of the peshat, not to build the hypothetical constructions in the air, not to show how you can think of 49 different possibilities, but Ayun is based, the Ayun HaSefaradi, as various, Daniel Boyarin has written about this and others, means that if you study deeply the words and the meaning of the words and the way the sentence is constructed and the way, why does one sentence and one argument come before the other and not after the other, and you go very deeply into the sugya and the text as it is before you, then you can unlock the secrets of the text with the powers of your own intellect. And you, in this sense, you should be doing this, according to Shitat HaAyun, before you read the Mefarshim. Because Rashi didn't have Perush Rashi. Okay? And the Ramban didn't have Perush HaRamban. How did they therefore achieve what they achieved? By applying their intellect to the deep perusal and study of the words of the text that is before them. And if you do that, you will now be actually able to understand what they were getting at and what was a problem for them. Okay, and if you just read what they say without understanding that, you don't really have appreciation because you already know the answer. It's like if you do a crossword puzzle, but just you look in the back and you see what the answer is. Okay, that's not the chokhmah, and you don't appreciate it. So that's the iyun. And this is the way that was taught in the yeshivot, in Halab, and in other great centers of Sephardic learning. Chotam emet. And this learning of Iyun has the ring and signature of truth. And it's against falsifying or making up different inventions before you actually went through and deeply considered the, with your own intellect. But when people do all kind of shiny, snazzy learning and combinations without actually going deeply into the sources, this grates on my ear and, as it were, cuts my wings. Hagaon Yitzhak Dayan HaManoach Alufi V'Yedidi, as I said, Yitzhak Dayan from the famous Dayan family was his elder peer. Okay, he was several years his senior, but they studied together. And he developed my talents, and he prevented me from falling into mistakes. And especially he taught me how to understand the grammar and instruction of the Hebrew language, which is like an ornament for the persons that study. Especially he took pleasure in the writings of the great poets of medieval times. And now he goes to the works of philosophy, of the great giants of philosophy, Rabbeinu Bahaye, Bakuzari of Yehuda Levi, Bamure, Mure HaNebuchim, Uve Mefarshav Shem Tov Ve'Efudi. So you can see here that at the beginning of the 20th century, okay, so this is like about the first decade of the 20th century. He was born in 1889. So we're talking now when he is in his late teens and early 20s. He, in Halab, is combining Iyun and learning the Hebrew language and learning poetry and learning philosophy. And this he is presenting as his sort of CV. Okay, and this, once again, we can learn from this, as we saw on the other, what he considers to be the proper training that a rabbi should have. Okay, hapat kal letami sali be'eretz oni umirudi. The bread was lacking and was emptied out of my basket in the city or the country of my poverty and my suffering. In other words, okay, why did everybody leave Aleppo? Because the economic situation in Syria was weakening. Once the Suez Canal opened in 1869, the great caravans that used to cross through Aleppo and go to Persia and Turkey and so on were no longer needed because the trade with the East went through the Suez Canal. And after that, the economic fortunes of Halab and the whole area of the Levant were on the decline, and people started to look for work elsewhere. That's how people came to America. That's how people came to North America, South America, Egypt. And some of the rabbis, not for monetary reasons, came to Eretz Yisrael, to Jerusalem. Okay, so that in the 1890s, and the first decade or two of the 20th century, there was a movement of rabbis from Halab to Jerusalem, not for money, because there wasn't any great economic boom in Jerusalem at that time, but because they felt if they were leaving Halab, they should at least go up to a more holy place. And the only more holy place that they could imagine than Halab was Jerusalem. And in fact, this is what Rabbi Matlub did. Okay? I had a family to support, and I could no longer give milk, as it were. There is no way for me to live and study and teach Torah if there was no income. I left for Jerusalem. I left my town with a bit of bread. I traveled to Jerusalem in the hope to construct there my future. But I came up against difficulties, obstacles. And these obstacles caused me to move to America. Okay? What are these obstacles and what was going on? Okay, he doesn't say. It's a matter of hypothesis. I have certain thoughts about this, but they're nothing more than hypothesis. Pull. Talmud Torah u'mishar kolenu ma'amadim. Here, by studying Torah and engaging in mishar, which is in commerce, I was able to gain standing. Mishar tafel. But I regarded the commerce as secondary and peripheral. Lifrakim nahal zilzul mitzidi. And I regarded it with indifference. And I was not consumed totally by its destructive angel. Okay, because people could become involved in making money like a drug. And you can become totally sucked in, and it's true, you're making a lot of money and you're at an eternal high. But that's not what Rav Matlub wanted. Rav Matlub Avadi wanted, Shaul Matlub, that he should have enough money that his children shouldn't go hungry, his wife shouldn't go hungry. V'talmud ikar. And the main thing is study of Torah. Sorer beveti gam bemisradi. Not only in my home that I study, but also in my office, I try to devote time to study of Torah when I could. Be'ahavato shagiti lishta'ashati b'shalvati uvenu'i venudi. And in the love of Talmud and studying Torah, I was drawn in and I got pleasure both when things were quiet and good and also when things were more difficult. Ke'esh ochelet atzur be'atzmotai. It was like a burning force within me to engage more and more in the study of Torah. Bivisari v'gilbi, in my flesh and in my skin. Okay. Be'America me'az hakemach lo kala mikadin. After I arrived in America, I was never lacking in kemah, in flour, in other words, in material income and success. In kemah, in Torah, okay? V'sabati mikdash en shulchani utzeli shipudi. And I was happy to have a table with food and with meat. And ulam matzfuni hofech lela'ana kosi unizi. But my conscience turns all of this food before me to have a bitter taste. Alit hamkim Yerushalayim uvagola takati et idi. Because I had left behind Jerusalem and set myself up and established myself in the Gola. Kelimati le'umati tochichani vatames ka'ash hamudi. In other words, I felt great shame about this and my inner reproach. And all of this, as it were, ate away, like moths eating away cloth, this ate away my feeling of prosperity and success. And in secret, my soul was crying, and I put my tears in the vessel of tears. And now he gets on to the situation of Torah in
America.
Elbona Torah ba'adatenu kahetz filach kevedi.
Torah is, as he describes it, when he came here, he found that Torah was in dishonor. And this cut to his quick, as if he has an arrow in his liver.
B'kere'ah mechani tistapek ha-talmid ha-yisraeli haridi.
Haridi here appears as religious, devoted to God. The Jewish religious student can mechanically read the words, meaning, but not to understand.
B'havanat ha-chumash,
when it really comes to understanding the chumash,
דומה לשכינו האיטלקי והאירלנדי.
Okay, when it comes to understanding the content rather than just saying the words, he is just like his Italian or Irish neighbor. It's not easy to get Irlandi into a rhyme.
והעדה מתעוננת,
and the community is complaining,
America שמתה יונקי מדדי.
America tore away my babe from my breast.
החינוך העממי בסקול,
the public education in the school,
נבנה מחורבני ושודי.
As good as public school education was in America. Okay, in Aleppo there was no public schools. In Aleppo, if the Jews didn't have schools that they themselves made for the children, nobody knew anything. In fact, other communities that were non-Jewish living, many of them didn't send and didn't devote so much to study, so they really didn't know anything. Here, it was free public school, much better than anything that existed at that time in the Ottoman Empire. But, at the same time, this attracted children away, and now when were they going to study Torah?
בשומרי חומותיו.
The guardians of the walls of the American education, in fact, caused damage to the continuation of the tradition of Torah learning. And therefore, he says in the next section, he decided to devote himself to teaching Torah to the young children of the community. Now, at the same time, I won't go into everything. He realizes that this is the need of the hour, because otherwise the children are going to have nothing. At the same time, you have to realize this was the person who was offered to be the Rosh Yeshivat Porat Yosef. It's like somebody could be the university professor in some great university, and he's teaching Sunday school. Now he feels that this teaching is what is necessary and required because of the needs of the hour. At the same time, there's a tremendous gap between his own capabilities, training, and all of these great things. He's going to teach children in second grade, Rambam. He's going to teach them Rabbeinu Nissim. He's going to teach them Iyun. They can't even read a line in Tanakh. Okay? And this gave him in different places, yeah. In fact, that's why I called the name of this presentation. He was a tragic figure because of the tremendous gap between his capabilities, his knowledge, his training. Okay, somebody, like you see, somebody studied to be a master samurai, and he's teaching physical education to children in second grade. Okay, so that's the analogy.
הרמב״ם, we'll go over to the next paragraph. הרמב״ם מנוחתו כבוד, אורי רועי ופודי.
Okay, here he takes a time out to say who his great hero was. His great hero is Rambam ben Moshe ben Maimon. He was my light, my shepherd, and my redeemer.
פודני מסיכלות,
he redeemed me from foolishness. Okay, in fact, this was the Rambam's goal. The Rambam felt that many people who are observing mitzvot, who are in fact, on a practical level, completely religious, on the other hand, on the intellectual level, they were on the level of foolishness, because they didn't appreciate the deep ideas of Torah and philosophy and their
way, as it was said by David earlier, of melding together these great traditions. And the Rambam, he says, was my savior. Podeni misichlut, he redeemed me from foolishness. Umishtatef biyegoni betzalei uverikudi, and he participated in my sorrows when I stumbled and also when I danced. Tamid mi'arubot v'samav ariti mori v'nerdi, from the rows of his spice plants, arugat habosen, which is called from Shir HaShirim, is that somebody plants beautiful smelling herbs and spices, and this is the gives inspiration and zest for life. Ariti b'mori v'nirdi v'lo batachti b'horati, and I never had trust in my own decisions in halacha. Ad shehitzagiti la'adi, I always, when I make any decision, I always went and checked in the Rambam if it's consonant with the Rambam or not. U'keshebikashti v'lo mitzati, when I tried to find his position, whether it agreed with him, I found that I failed to find this. B'mishpati hit'orer hashdi, I distrusted my own judgment if I found that it was not consonant with what appeared from the Rambam. Zachiti leharbot talmidav ve'imam amtik sodi. Okay, and I educated some students to be able to follow the Rambam, and together with them, I share the this secret knowledge. And he concludes, "Hashochen v'Tzion, God who dwells in Tzion, shelechonen afara aragti mi'odi, that I have always been seeking to connect to the earth of Tzion." Ulenochach devira hashamem paniti behitpaleli uvesugdi, and towards its the ruined temple in Jerusalem, I turn when I pray and when I bow down. May God yechonen mikdasha masat nefesh kol yehudi. May God rebuild the temple, which is the hope of all Jews. Uleoro yilehu gam shechineha ha'arami vehagiladi, and to the light of Torah will also be followed by the neighbors of the Jews, ha'arami vehagiladi. And here you have a hint of a notion of the universal vision of Torah. Okay? As some people, you might get the impression that they have the idea that God is interested in the Jews. And they go in, God, you know, big good riddance. And God, but in the view of Rambam, and in the view of Rabbi Shaul Matlub, no. God is the God of all human beings. And Torah has content and message which is of value and significance for all human beings, and therefore ultimately the vision is that not only will the Torah, will the Mikdash be rebuilt for the Jewish people, but also the light of Torah will extend over the other human beings. Bishalom yashivu nahalata eretz hareuvani hagadi, in peace will the areas of the Jewish people be returned, of the Hare Uvani v'Agadi, uve eretz Hatzavi, and in the land of Hatzavi, meaning the land of Israel, namer irbatz in Gedi, the leopard will lie down with the kid, which is of course the messianic vision of peace, and according to the Rambam, it's a metaphor. It's not that the animals will change, it's that human beings will be able to live in brotherhood with each other. Okay, so these two introductions to his work really reflect a lot, both of his own vision of himself, of the traditions of the Sephardic rabbinate study and learning as it was in the past and as it should be in the present, the combination of Torah, learning, poetry, philosophy, grammar, ayun, a pshat, and also a broader vision for
the well-being of the future of the Jewish people and of mankind in general. And once again, I will just stress, at the same time, what was he actually doing? Teaching third and fourth grade children in the Talmud Torah. On the other side of this same page, there are two sections, but I would like to read one with you, and then we'll see about the other. On this side, it says, Natan Magen Ba'adin, page 303, and this is a speech that he gave in the spring of 1939 to the graduating class of the Talmud Torah. Elam Esayami, to the people that are completing their studies in the Talmud Torah. Okay, now how old could they have been? I don't know, until what age did people study the Talmud Torah?
Since they were this high.
Until?
Maybe 18, 19.
Okay, so maybe some. Okay, מפני חטאינו גלינו מארצנו ואיבדנו ממלכתנו וחירותנו. Because of our sins, we had to exile from our land and we lost our kingdom and our freedom. Okay, now this word, חירותנו, freedom, is not something which you would usually find in rabbinic tongue. מפני חטאינו גלינו מארצנו ונרחק מעלמתנו, that's on the תפילת המוסף. Okay, because Rabbi Matlub was very concerned with the national well-being of the Jewish people, in addition to their well-being and in religion and Torah. So we lost our kingdom, we lost our freedom. Ach lo ibadenu et sefer Toratenu. We did not lose our Torah. Otsar mahamadenu umekor tikevatenu. The treasury of our hopes and the source, the treasury of our precious things and the source of our hope. Hame'id al zechuyotenu ha'historiot. Now once again, this is a modern phrase. The Torah is a witness to our historic rights. Velo zanachnu et mitzvotenu. We also did not abandon the mitzvot. Berit melach kiyumenu v'sod hasharat nafshenu ramin. These commandments are the source of our continued existence in this world. And what gives us a future in the world to come. לכל מקום שגלינו גלתה שכינה עמנו. To every place that we went in the Galut, in the diaspora, the God's presence went together with us. ממדינה למדינה נסענו לפנינו את לפיד אש דתנו. From country to country we carried with us before us the torch of our, the fire of our religion, shehalachnu le'oro. Once again, this metaphor of a torch is something that carried before us. Ubo sarafnu et kash ha'elilim v'havlehim. With this torch, we burned the straw of paganism and their foolish ideas. V'hafachnu et lev ovdehem le'ha'amin be'el echad. We brought the people that previously believed in pagan idolatry to believe in one God. Now this you can also see, also the Rambam says this, but also his compatriot and elder peer Yitzhak Dayan, in a very interesting essay he published in 1924, Torat Yisrael Vam Yisrael says that in fact the mission of Israel to the entire world was to a logic sense successful because the great religions are monotheistic. Now, while this is more conventional with regard to Islam, it's less conventional with regard to Christianity. But nevertheless, this is what Yitzhak Dayan says and other rabbis. בכל דור מסרנו את נפשנו על קידוש שמו. In every generation, we were willing to devote ourselves completely, our souls, to Kiddush Hashem. ולמרות הלחץ והמסוכה,
הגזרות והעינויים הנוראים, despite the pressure and the suffering and the decrees and the tortures, עסקנו יומם ולילה בתורתו, שממקורה הברוך שאבנו מנחמה וסון. We devoted ourselves day and night to Torah, and from that blessed source we drew waters of consolation and happiness. Olz v'savlanut, power and patience, לנפשנו המדוקה, to our suppressed and deep souls. ומבערה הנוזל מים חיים, השקנו. Oh, there's another, once again. From the soul, from the waters of Torah, from the wellsprings of Torah, which have waters of life, we irrigated and we gave to drink. Derech tzinorot vekelim tshunim, through different pipelines and vessels, et otam ha'aratzot ha'metukanot u'ne'orot shebeyamenu, we gave life and source Torah to those well-ordered and enlightened countries in our time, sheyesodam chofesh v'demokratia, that are founded on freedom and democracy. In other words, Chacham Shaul Matlub was able, and he states here very clearly, to see the sources of democracy and freedom as deriving from the teachings of Torah Yisrael, which in fact, by the way, historically is completely true. If you look at the original writings of the founding fathers of the American Constitution and so on, you see that these were people who were drawing upon Christian humanism in order to create a country which would be different than tyranny and so on. And the, however, once again, it's not always easy for rabbis to recognize this. And sometimes some people would have a feeling that before democracy and before freedom, things were under tighter control. People couldn't do everything they just wanted to do, and that was much better. In fact, one of the leading founders of the Haredi movement in Europe, Hatam Sofer, was an avowed monarchist because he felt it was very lax, and democracy and all this republic. Oh, but you see here a different sentiment. Uverom mekomot pizurenu lo paratznu hagader hamafsik beinenu lishchinenu. In most of the places that we were exiled to, we did not break down the fence between us and our neighbors. Velo hitbolalnu bahem, and we did not assimilate into them. Ach hitamatznu lehagen al te'udato shel am levadad yishkon. We tried to preserve the mission, the vision of a people that dwells alone, bodid bedato, in its religious beliefs, b'shabbatotav u'b'chagav, in the holidays, in the Shabbat, ma'achalav u'mishtav, in the kosher food, taharat mishpachto ha'metzui. In other words, although we appreciate and have respect and recognize the sources of democracy and freedom as stemming from Torah, at the same time we preserve our traditions and our unique framework. And he now goes on to say, Birchatim l'abaitchem, I give you my blessing, and he's talking to the people that are now finishing the Talmud Torah, Ki tamid ta'amod ha-Torah b'merkaz olamachem, that the Torah will always be at the center of your world. V'ha'emunah, and belief, takesh orashim b'chayichem, will have deep roots in your life. Ka'avotenu ha-tamimim, as our pure fathers, takedimu na'aseh l'nishma, you will do what has to be done and follow the practice of Jewish life even before you understand. Tamshichu v'ta'arivu, you should, tashkimu v'ta'arivu, you should wake up and you should come in the evening, el bet ha-midrash, el bet ha-kenes u bet ha-midrash, to the synagogue and to the hall of study, Mikdash Ne'at, which is a small temple, of Golatenu Umivtsarucha. This is the bastion of the spirit of Bihud Birzata Shabbat Nishmat Chayenu Vepeerenu. You should Tizkugam Lekarev Shar Sidiya, that you should bring near the other young people of the community, El Hame'or Shebayahadut, to the light of Judaism, and especially to make
the fences around the Shabbat, the breach of the Shabbat, Nishmat Hayin, which is the lifeblood and the glory, שלצערנו ובושתנו, that through our great shame, רבו בזמן האחרון מחלליה והמקריבים קדושתה על מזבח עגל הזהב. In other words, in his time, many people were in fact going to work on Shabbat in order to make more money, and he felt that this was something that the students who studied the Talmud Torah should spread in the community, that this should stop. And now, an especially unusual comment, was unusual in 1939, and it's not usual enough now. הלוואי ותצליחו גם בפדיון שבויות. Hopefully, you should also be successful in redemption of the women or female captives who are imprisoned. Who is this? אלה בנותינו. These are our daughters, the girls and young women in the community. חוט השדרה בתרבות הדור והעתיד. They are the backbone of the culture of the future generation. שזלזלנו בחינוכם. We have not devoted time and the effort to a true inculcating Torah and the teaching of Judaism to women. Okay, now this, in 1939, and in certain circles today, is radical. Now, the truth is that in Aleppo, women never studied nothing. There was Kutab, there was study, there was Talmud Torah, there was Yeshiva. Not for women. Okay? And here, in 1939, now, of course, he's been living in America. On the other hand, he doesn't say it's America, we have to reject it. That's what the goyim do. The goyim teach the girls. Okay? He says, in fact, the girls are prisoners. They're prisoners of ignorance. Who put them in this prison of ignorance? We did, the community, because we didn't devote enough effort and appreciation and understanding of the importance of Torah education for women. And therefore, these women are imprisoned in lack of knowledge. ועד היום מעט מאז אחוז הממשיכות לימודן העברי. Okay, מעט מאוד it should be. This is a typo. Very few of women study Hebrew. ורובם דומות בבגרותם, and most of them are similar, even when they're adults, לתינוקות שנשבו בין הגויים. Okay, Tinok Shenishba is somebody who was a child, was captured by Goyim, and brought up by the Goyim, and therefore, it's not their blame that they don't understand Torah, that they don't know the great traditions of, because, nobody taught them. Who is in that position? He says, the girls and the women of our community, even when they're adults, they're like prisoners. But interestingly and paradoxically, who are the people who constructed this prison for them and who captured them? It's us. By not giving them the serious education, we in fact have put them in the prison of ignorance. And therefore, what can we expect? ורובם דומות בבגרותם לתינוקות שנשבו בין הגויים, יהי רצון שתגאלו אותם גאולת רוח שלמה. It should be God's will that you should redeem them, a complete redemption of the spirit. Okay, how are we doing for time? Okay, I'll read another paragraph and then maybe we could, I'll sum up, because, okay. מאושרים אתם, you are very happy and blessed. החיים באמריקה ארץ השפע, האור והדרור. You live in a country of abundance, of light and of freedom. ובעלת האפשרויות הבלתי גמולות, which has unlimited possibilities. אשריכם, you will be blessed. אם תשמשו בכל החומר הזה, you will use all this material capabilities that you have, לעזרת אחיכם שבארצות החושך, הדלות והעריצות, to help your brethren who in the lands of darkness, poverty and tyranny, השוקים והנרדפים, the people that are deprived, robbed and persecuted, ושצעדיהם ואוויר נשימתם מוגבלים שם, and whose steps and breath of air are limited. Now, of course, when is he writing this? This is 1939. What's happening in the world? In Nazi Germany, in other places in Europe, in Soviet Russia. Okay? So he is calling upon his students not to only think and not to only live in the golden land of unlimited opportunity and freedom, but to use their powers for the benefit of their persecuted brothers who are less fortunate. ואשריכם יותר אם תנצלו את השעה לטובת ארץ ישראל. And even more will you be blessed if you will use the opportunity for the sake of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. גאוות עברנו וזוהר עתידנו. The pride of our past and the brilliance or splendor of our future. למלות את חובתכם לה, to fulfill your obligations towards her. ולעזור בכל האמצעים והדרכים, and help with all the ways and paths המובילים that lead לבניין חורבותיה ולהפרחת שממה, to the reconstruction of its ruins and to the flowering of its settlement. זכרו את שבועתנו לציון על נהרות בבל. Remember our vow to Zion on the waters of Babylon. ואת שאיפתנו תפילתנו אליה כל הדורות, and our hopes and our prayers to her throughout the generations. אל תהיו מהנחשלים שבמחנה. Don't be the laggards in the encampment. היו בתוך המערכה הראשונה של מגימיה ולוחמיה. You should be in the front lines of its protectors and those striving for its freedom. ותפסו מקום חשוב בין בניה בוניה הנאמנים. And you should occupy an important place in those who are faithful sons to reconstruct. You see that in many ways Chacham Matlub was bringing the heritage and the knowledge and the learning of Aram Tzuva and the great Sephardic tradition to bear in new circumstances. Okay, Syria under the Ottomans and in 1939 under the French mandate was not the land of democracy and freedom. The vision of many people, many observant people, also in 1939, did not extend beyond a hope for the well-being and success of the Jewish people per se. The notion, and you see here how the heritage of Rambam and the heritage of Iyun, what does Iyun mean? You, with your understanding and intellect, could take texts and understand them in depth, perhaps in ways which they were not understood previously. By the same token, okay, I always say to my students, okay, we know the Oraita and the Rabbanan. The Oraita means it comes from the Torah, and the Rabbanan means comes from the rabbis. But how do we know what is the Oraita and not the Rabbanan? The rabbis. Okay? And it could be, and in fact, that a rabbi in a future generation would say, I now realize that this is the Oraita. In the past, we didn't realize it. But by deep learning, we could now see certain things in Torah which we didn't see before. That's not a sign of a lack of the previous generations. Because the generation, each generation has its own abilities to gain new insight in Torah. Otherwise, Torah would be terribly boring. Nobody would study Torah if the only thing that they could do. Well, hopefully nobody would study Torah. The only thing that they could do would be to repeat what people already said previously, like a recording machine. Okay? The great beauty of Torah is that you could take as examples the wonderful creative insight of the rabbis of the past and continue that. That's the torch of Torah that's being carried. Okay? And you could cast new light and see. Now, by the same token, okay, democracy. Is democracy derived from Torah or not? What about the notion that women and girls should study Torah and have education, and if not, they're in prison? That was not something that if you came to a rabbi in the year 1700 and asked him about that, no problem. Women, it's enough, they study from their mothers and their grandmothers and they tell them what to do and what not to do, and if they have a question, they can ask their husband. Okay, so you see here that Rabbi Shaul Matlub Abadi is taking Torah and the insights of Torah and the power of Torah and relating to new issues or new perspectives that were not previously widely accepted. And he's saying to the graduates of the Talmud Torah, in his time there was not education for girls. But he's saying this is a big problem. This is a shame. We have imprisoned our own women folk in ignorance. It's not good for women to be ignorant. It's not a zehut that the women will all the time be dependent upon others. The more they know, the more the backbone of the community and the future generation will be built. Meaning, who is the main educator of the children? In fact, it's the mother. And if the mother knows Torah, she can be even stronger at this than she could in the present. And in that sense, we see that the ability to combine a great commitment to the insights, the rabbis, the leaders, the way of study of the past, the poets of medieval times, the philosophers, doesn't mean that I necessarily today want to recreate the life of the Jewish people in the year 1400. But it's by taking the example and the direction and the illumination of this lapid, of this torch of Torah forward, that the continuation of Torah can relate to new situations that didn't exist in previous times, and do this with the powers and the capabilities of the great giants of the past. And in this sense, Rav Shaul Matlub Abadi was trying valiantly to do this with his great powers and capabilities in a context in which he frequently faced frustration and all the time had at the back or side of his mind the gap between what he could be doing and what he was called upon to do because of the context of his life.
We'll take questions. I'm not going to carry the microphone around, so if you have a question, ask, and you'll repeat the question and answer. Okay? That's good.
Yes, sir.
From all the reading that you read, and I probably know you read, what would you say about his reading and how he wrote?
The question is, how would I say about the way he wrote? Okay, he wrote, first of all, with a very full command of the Hebrew language. He structured his writing very clearly so that you know it's now beginning, it now proceeds. We're going to now have four issues that we have to deal with one by one and then reach a conclusion based, in other words, it's a very structured and well thought out mode of presentation. And of course, it integrates allusions and quotations which are not always obvious up front to the wide resources of the sources and the text that he had at his command. Yes, please.
just wondering if the progressive approach that Thomas Mubetti had to Judaism, whether that was representative of all or most of the rabbis from Syria during the 1800s, and also whether, if you know, whether the lay people were in on this whole progressive approach, or whether they were relatively ignorant of this approach.
Okay, so the question is, whether this progressive approach by Rabbi Matlub Abadi was characteristic also of many of the other rabbis, and whether the general public also had this approach. That's a good question. I think that it's a mixed bag. In other words, there were rabbis who were like this, and there were rabbis that were not like this, and the fact is that a lot of time had passed since the heyday of the golden age of the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th centuries, and since the expulsion from Spain, and certainly there was no lack of rabbis who did not achieve this pinnacle of success in knowing all these things and putting all these things together. But I think that what was common was that if somebody could do this, then that person was very much appreciated and looked up to as somebody who had managed to do that. But I would not say that all of the rabbis were like this. However, once again, there is a tendency in our times to cast the rabbis of the past in light of the present. And I'll give you an example, which was written about in the book of my friend, Dr. Yaron Harel. It was the rabbis of Aleppo who invited the Alliance to come and open a school in Aleppo. They were not opposed to the Alliance. They wanted the Alliance to come. And when the certain elite group of the wealthy people of the Francos said, we only want the Alliance to be an elite school for the rich kids, so no, it was Chacham Shueka and others who said, no, it should be open to all students who are capable. Okay? And the whole notion that there was an eternal enmity between the notion of modern schooling and all the rabbis of Aleppo is a retroactive misrepresentation through Haredi eyes of a certain stream which did emerge later on of some rabbis who were opposed. And in many cases, the opposition was not to secular learning per se, but to the claim that the Alliance was teaching the children to go against religion. Okay, but as long as this secular general studies went together with the commitment to Torah and study of Torah, then this was seen as perfectly fine also by most of the Sephardic rabbis in Jerusalem. When the Alliance and when the Beit Sefer Lemel opened, it was mainly the Ashkenazim who opposed this, and Ben Ish Chai has writings when he gave a speech in 1903 when they opened the new building of the Alliance in Baghdad, praising the school of the Alliance. So in retrospect now, people would think that no, the rabbis of the Syria, Iraq, Eretz Yisrael are all opposed to secular studies from the beginning. But so there's a rewriting of history. But at the same time, to say that everybody was like Rav Matlub Abadi or like Rabbi Yitzhak Dayan and so on, would also not be true. Yes, please.
What do we know about their teachers? Have you done studies on their teachers? Or it was Hamshayo, and who else was doing it?
He mentions Chacham Shayo. The truth is that I have a lot to learn. Okay, so I go bit by bit. Before I read this book and considered what it has to say, and so I didn't know what
Rav Saul Matlub to say, before I read this essay of Rabbi Yitzhak Dayan, I didn't know his position, and it's like the people that are going into like Lewis and Clark. Okay, they're going to the uncharted, the names of these rabbis you can read about. Okay, but what is the content of their thought? What is their specific contribution? How do they put each one as an individual? And it will take a lot of work, which I certainly won't complete, but the more people are involved in this, the better, to... Okay, and as I said, at the same time, there's other people who have a different agenda. I don't want to say that all these people were really from Shas and to the right. Okay, so so I can only do what I can do, and that's why I always work from texts. I never say kabelu da'ati, except what I have to say. That's why I always read line by line. And from this, you could see what the person actually said. And if they didn't say that, then it's possible to, you didn't read it right. But that's the text. Yes, please.
You seem to have a hypothesis, and I'll preface that. You did said it was only a hypothesis as to why he didn't accept the position of Rosh Hashiva and the slaves.
Okay, this is hypothesis, and it's no more than hypothesis, and I'm...
Here goes.
The hypothesis, okay, the question is why he did not accept the position of Rosh Yeshivat Porat Yosef. Okay. In Halab, the majority of rabbis were engaged in Talmud and Halakha, and the minority were engaged in Kabbalah. When there was a move in the 1890s and 1900, beginning 1900, to Jerusalem, for some interesting reason, which I just mentioned, I don't know why, but for some reason, maybe they came to a place of the Shekhinah, of the Holy Spirit, of whatever, tens of rabbis from Halab switched over to Kabbalah. They established yeshivot to study Kabbalah, which didn't exist in Aleppo, to the best of my knowledge. And they devoted themselves to Kabbalah. They wrote books about Kabbalah, and they published. And if you go to look now, how many books of Sheilot and Teshuvot were written by rabbis from Aleppo in the 20th century? Very weak. One, Chacham Yeskil Avdi, Ovadia Hadaya, wrote a very important series of Teshuvot Halakha, and he was also a great Mekuban. But it's very rare. Here there's some Sheilot in Teshuvot, maybe some after posthumously, Chacham Yitzchak Shchaibar, they published some book, some Sheilot in Teshuvot, but it's not the same as it was. On the other hand, Kabbalah, carte blanche. Okay? Now, that's one thing. Second thing, the rabbis from Aleppo, when they moved to Jerusalem, they settled in certain neighborhoods. Those neighborhoods happened to be also the stronghold of the ultra-Orthodox Ashkenazim. Rabbi Zonenfeld, Rabbi Diskin, and so on. And they became friends with them. So that, for instance, in 1923, when it was suggested to open a lodge of Bnei Brit in Aleppo, okay, now the lodge of Bnei, what is Bnei Brit? Bnei Brit is a Jewish organization by Jewish people around the world. It was founded in the United States, by the way, devoted to Jewish continuity, Jewish culture, Jewish community, and so on. And in various areas of the East, the leading rabbis were members of Bnei Brit. The chief rabbi of Turkey in 1924, Rabbi Bejarano, was a member of Bnei Brit. Chacham Yaakov Meir, who was the Rishon LeZion, was a member of Bnei Brit. Other leading rabbis were members of Bnei Brit. So people came and they wanted to open such a organization also in Aleppo. What did the rabbis, so certain rabbis in Aleppo, what did they do? They wrote to the Beit Din of the Halabim in Jerusalem. The Beit Din of Halabim didn't know what this was. They went to the Ashkenazim. Who? Not Rav Kook or them. To Rav Zunin Chedron Diskin. And they wrote back a telegram. It says, we shalnu et Rabbanei Ashkenaziyya. Ve'amru. Ve'nistera ve'initma'a. Because it's a closed society and they have different activities that we don't know what's going on, it's impure. Okay, and because of this, there was a tremendous battle in Halab against the Bnei B'rit, not because of what the local rabbis knew or didn't know, not even because of the rabbis, but because of the influence on the ultra-Orthodox Ashkenazim on the rabbis in Jerusalem, which cast back to the rabbis in Halab, who by that time were few and far between, because most of the rabbis had emigrated. And therefore, it became like self-evident that the true tradition of Halab is to oppose Bnei B'rit. Okay, now in America, Bnei B'rit is a very upright, honest, respected organization. Why should you oppose Bnei B'rit? It's like it's milk, you know, motherhood. Why should you oppose it? But, no, it's because, so, it's my hypothesis that when he came there, and he saw that instead of engaging in Rambam and Halakha, so many people were engaged in Kabbalah. He says it was miracle workers. They could divine what's going to be the future. They could bring babies to barren women and so on, which is just the type of thing that he didn't feel comfortable with. I think that this dissuaded him. But once again, this is a hypothesis. Okay, well, yeah, please.
So, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, basically, he was dealing with the struggles of educating children, different groups. Well, I know it's a very hard question to ask you. If he was living today, what would you think of our community today that we went so far to the right, to the head of the, I don't know if you can answer this, but...
It's very hard to know because you would have to extrapolate so many things that in fact the question that you raise is connected to issues that were raised earlier. What should people today living in the community or other people, because I don't think I don't think that the Sephardic tradition is something that should interest only Sephardim. I think it's a tradition that has a value for all Jews. Okay? And in that sense, I don't think that people should be Sephardic only because of nostalgia of the good old country, but because there's something of value here for the future. And kind of a home for the present. And in that sense, the question, the burden of the extrapolation is upon us. How we live, how we build our families, how we relate to women studying Torah, how we relate to honesty, how we relate to people who are seeking kavod more than shying away from it. This is an issue which we have to extrapolate because only we are living in the concrete conditions of our time and place and know. And he did his best on, as he could in his own situation, and it's not always the people like this who are successful. Lo alecha hamelacha ligmor. Yes, please.
Has there been enough primary source material about the Arab rabbis from Aleppo to give us a good picture of the religious philosophy from Aleppo, or is it rather scarce and much of it is subject to extrapolation?
Well, first of all, there are many writings of rabbis from Aleppo, especially in the 19th, 18th centuries. Many books of scholarship were written by great rabbis from Aleppo in the 17th and 16th centuries also. there is a dearth of discussion of the content. Because also a lot of this, you know, it's a project. Let's say anybody, I want to know what did Einstein think. It's a project. I want to know what did Rambam think. Until today, people are writing many, many books to try to understand the Rambam's position on many issues. So it's a project which I think should be encouraged. The community should be interested in encouraging this to get people to actually work and do scholarship grounded in texts and in the knowledge that these people would have in the general Jewish philosophy and Jewish culture to see what did Chacham Laniadol think, what did Chacham Sitehon think, and so on, and these are very worthy projects.
The text would be in Hebrew and Arabic?
The text would typically be in Hebrew. Depending who it was, it would have more or less mixed in Aramaic, because people who studied Talmud naturally felt everybody knew these phrases, and of course, since in many cases these people were writing for their peers, so they assumed that the reader would be able to get their hints, allusions, and they wouldn't have to necessarily work through the arguments explicitly, although many times they did do so, and it's very interesting in my opinion, but it's a project.
Yes, please. Did Maimonides speak about a lump of rabbis?
Yes.
That was very, very old.
Yes. In other words, well, okay, here's the issue. My Rambam wrote to the rabbis in France, who were in him with correspondence, and he said that the light of Torah is almost extinguished in the East. The Geonim in Bavel have grown, the great yeshivot have grown very weak. Here and there, and one of the places in which the light of Torah continues to exist, okay, now when is this? This is around 1180. But, and this is continuation of what he said, you can't live basking in the glories and achievements of people who lived 500 years ago, or even 200 years ago. Okay, this is like people that come from nobility in England. My great grandfather was the Duke of this. My grandmother was the Marquess of so and so. And who are you? Okay, I work in the government because, okay, so to be of aristocratic origins
is something too,
but it's not enough. The people who were the original aristocrats didn't depend on their origins. They depended on their creativity, and this, in other words, is the calling of people who have great ancestors. Not to only look back and get naches from their great-grandparents, but to create a future which will be continuing in a different context, in a different situation, the main thrusts and orientations which can be derived from these kind of sources. Yes, please.
You mentioned something very interesting in the main drift. Specifically, that the rabbis in Jerusalem both had asked their peers, or perhaps even the way they read the superiors of the Ashkenazim.
Yeah, they didn't have to write, they were just living door to door with them.
Is that something new, what they would have to see?
Yes.
There?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, it was a certain type of milieu in which. Look, the ultra-Orthodox Ashkenazim developed a recipe which they believed in and believe in very fervently, how to relate to the challenges of modernity. It's rejectionist mentality. Okay, if that's what the goyim say and that's what this says, we're going to do the opposite. And we're going to fight against it and we're going to maintain something else. Okay, and this mentality, it projects itself as having a great internal feeling of confidence and empowerment. Okay, now, it's very likely if the rebbes that came from Halab found themselves in a new situation, which was interesting and fluid, because there was the old yeshuv, there was the beginnings of the new yeshuv already at the end of the 19th century. There was Ben Yehuda, who was urging everybody to speak Hebrew. There was whole things going on. And this was not the context that had been in Aleppo. And here were people who were offering a very clear recipe how to deal with this.
They had people who they could seek out who were dealing with these issues specifically.
Well, apparently it so happened that in the places that they lived, in the neighborhoods that they lived, in the country, that they came more into contact and were more in consonance with. Now, it could also be that there was a self-selection process. In other words, when people left Aleppo, who went to Jerusalem and who came to America? And who came to South America? The people who may have been more adventurous, more open-minded, more confident about their ability to deal with new things, maybe went to faraway exotic places. And so that may also have been a part of this issue.